I hope you are enjoying your day so far. This is Pat, and I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, July the 3rd. From the front page, road closures announced for Clinton's 250th event. The Clinton Celebrates America 250 committee has shared upcoming road closures and backup plans should weather make the square unsuitable for the celebration. Mr. Lincoln Square will be closed to vehicular traffic from 2:30 p.m. on Friday, July the 3rd, to 7 p.m. on Sunday, July the 5th. This includes one block off the square on Center and Main Streets. The 5K Fun Run will possibly cause traffic delays north of the square on Saturday, July the 4th, from 8 to 9 a.m. Illini Drive to West Main Street will be closed for the Let Freedom Ring Parade on Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m., the homecoming parade route. The committee appreciates everyone's patience and understanding as our community celebrates our nation's 250th birthday. Should rain make the square unusable, the entire celebration will move, minus the rock climbing wall, dunk tank, and zip line to the Clinton Junior High School. Vendors will be on the square, rain or shine. 4-H Fair scheduled for July 9th through the 12th. General projects and livestock shows highlighted. Clinton. The fairgrounds will be buzzing with the excitement during the DeWitt, Macon, and Piatt 4-H General Projects and Livestock Show, July 9th through July 12th. All general project exhibits will be open for public viewing from July the 10th through the 12th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Livestock exhibits will also be open for public viewing July 10th through the 12th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. July 9th, there'll be tractor driving at 5:30 p.m. July the 10th, general projects judging, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Rabbit Show at 10 a.m., the Goat Show at noon, Ag Olympics with DeWitt County Farm Bureau at 7 p.m. All youth are welcome to participate. July 11th, General Projects Judging, 8:30 to 2:30, the Swine Show at 8 a.m., the Poultry Show at 9 a.m., the Sheep Show at 2 p.m., Master Showmanship Contest, 6 p.m. July the 12th, General Projects Judging, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. The Beef Show at 9 a.m. Talent Show at 2:30 p.m. Awards Program at 4 p.m. With over 85 different project areas, our 4-H members have ample opportunity to display their skills and creativity to communities, said Marissa Capps, 4-H Program Coordinator. It's always a true joy to see what has inspired our youth each year and to hear them speak about their individual passions. A talent show has been added to the final day of the show, followed by the awards ceremony, recognizing members' achievements from the shooting sports final shoot competitions, horse show, and general projects and livestock show. Families are asked to bring lawn chairs for the events, as seating is limited. The University of Illinois provides equal opportunities in programs and employment. If you need a reasonable accommodation to participate, please call 217-877-6042. Early requests are strongly encouraged to allow sufficient time for meeting your access need. And further on the front page, County approves variety of expenditures, Gordon Woods reporting. The County Board approved June 18 a Highway Authority Agreement for a project on Revere Road. This essentially will increase the local share of the total project cost, said Road and Bridge Committee Chairman Jamie Prestigard. It will increase that amount $70,000, going from $337,000 up to $407,000. He said the local share was 20% of the total cost. County Engineer Mark Mathan said the original resolution was done before the letting and awarding of the project. It was based on the nearest estimate, Mathan said. Bids came in somewhat higher, and this reflects that increased portion. That total of $407,000 is the 20% local share. Mathan said the remainder was paid by the county's federal allowance. This was the two concrete ends of Revere Road, Mathan said. A highway authority agreement was approved for County Highway 4 at Illinois Route 54. This involves a project at the former Casey's location in Farmer City. Prestigard said IEPA, Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, testing showed the presence of contaminated soil at the site, which extends into the county right-of-way. The agreement is needed to give the property owners a notice of no further remediation. This process was started by the property owners as part of their removal of the underground storage tanks, said Mathan. That included setting monitoring wells on the property. The board approved a bid from Chase Environmental to remove a fuel tank located on the county building for $15,770. Board chairman and property committee member Joe Witt said it was the only bid the county received. This has to be done before any concrete work can be done, Witt said. There are some additional items we need to deal with, such as disposing of some bad fuel from the tanks. Board members also approved a quote from LS Mechanical to repair the air compressor at the jail for $16,793. Witt said it was the lowest of the two bids received by about $1,000. The board approved Dr. Mark Hobie to the DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department Board of Health and DeWitt County Tuberculosis Sanitarium Board with a term to expire June 30th of 2029. And from the columns page, 250 years later, local news still matters. From the Mac Desk by Billy McMacken. As our nation prepares to celebrate its 250th birthday, I've been thinking a lot about what has helped America endure for nearly 2.5 centuries. Certainly, it is the courage of those who fought for our freedom. It is the Constitution and the democratic principles from which our country was founded. It is the millions of Americans who have worked hard, raised families, served their communities, and passed their values on to the next generation. But there is another institution that has been there since the beginning of our republic, a free and independent press. When our nation's founders wrote the First Amendment, freedom of the press was not an afterthought. It was one of the very first rights they protected because they understood that informed citizens are essentials to self-government. For more than 250 years, newspapers have told the stories of their communities. We have celebrated victories, mourned losses, announced births, published obituaries, covered school board meetings, reported election results, highlighted student achievements, and recorded local history one week at a time. That mission continues today. Every Friday, our newspapers arrive in mailboxes throughout DeWitt County. Inside are the stories of our neighbors, our schools, our churches, our businesses, and our communities. These are stories that are often not found anywhere else. When a local student earns academic honors, we publish it. When a hometown team wins a championship, we cover it. When a village board makes a decision affecting taxpayers, we report it. When a longtime resident passes away, we help preserve their story for future generations. That work matters. It also costs money. Like nearly every newspaper in America, we face rising costs. Newsprint costs more. Printing costs more. Postage costs more. Fuel costs more. Software costs more. Everything involved in producing a community newspaper costs more than it did just a few years ago. Yet our commitment remains the same. We believe local news is worth preserving. We believe every community deserves coverage. We believe future generations should know what happened in their hometowns. Most importantly, we believe local journalism should remain locally owned and focused on serving readers rather than distant corporate interests. That is why Subscriber Report is so important. Advertising remains a vital part of our business, but subscriptions provide the foundation that allows us to continue covering the communities we serve. Every subscription helps pay for reporting, photography, printing, postage, and the countless behind-the-scenes tasks required to publish 9 newspapers each week. In honor of America's 250th birthday, we are offering a special 2-week subscription promotion. From June 29th through July 10, new and renewing subscribers can save $17.76 on a 1-year subscription. It's our $17.76 price for 2026 celebration. We hope you'll take advantage of this opportunity and, in doing so, help local journalism in DeWitt County. If you would like to subscribe or renew, call our office at 309-454-5476. This is a good opportunity for those of you who recently received renewal notices from us to pay for another year. Heck, I'll even let you pay for 2 years. Office hours are 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 9 a.m. to 12 on Friday. If you call after hours, simply leave a message and we will gladly call you back to take your credit card payment over the phone. As America celebrates 250 years of independence, we hope you'll help ensure local journalism remains strong for generations to come. Thank you for reading. Thank you for supporting local news, and thank you for following us, allowing us to tell your community stories each week. That is a responsibility we never take for granted, a responsibility I never take for granted. Billy McMacken is the owner of the Normalite Group. And from the op-ed page, the On Point column by Richard Corrett, 250th and counting. This week, the United States of America will celebrate its 25th birthday, or if you prefer, anniversary. This is a milestone that few nations in Western democratic societies have achieved. This is a moment in which we, as citizens of this nation, should have great pride. Unfortunately, there is a significant and growing segment of our society that literally despises this nation. They believe in universal wealth, not universal work. Many, if not most, of these individuals come from wealthy families whose parents and grandparents worked hard to achieve wealth. This group feels that they are entitled to that wealth and that, with a rich society, no one really needs to work. The government can simply print more money and utopia will be here. Their philosophical position has never worked when implemented and won't work even now, but they can certainly create havoc for the country. This article will focus on what our forefathers did for this country and why we should be thankful for their efforts and our model of government. The statement that freedom is not free is said so often that we may simply overlook the deep meaning of that phrase. Our nation was born in violence. Our 13 colonies on the East Coast were no match, either economically or militarily, for England. England had the cards, but the colonists had the grit and determination to contest being ruled by a power they had no say in. The king dictated and his minions simply complied, or they lost their lives. To challenge the king meant death, unless the king was defeated. We simply take our freedoms for granted. The colonists were literally giving their arms, lives, and lives for the dream of freedom, a concept that was unheard of in the world at that time. Franklin, Jefferson, Adams, Hancock, and Washington all had differing views on what kind of government a free nation should have, but they listened to each other and promulgated this nation. Their one true fear was that of having a king become the power in this country. The fear of big or central government continues in many respects in today's political debates. They also feared that the citizens could employ a popular force movement that did not truly consider the consequences of acting swiftly. They also wanted the individual states to have significant force against the national government. What the signers of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution developed was a government that was radical for the time and which has been proven by the test of time. The House of Representatives is based solely on population. Majority rules. This is the model mostly used by the parliaments of our European nations today. Action can be quick, but it lacks checks and balances. The Senate gives each state 2 votes. This was to counteract the possibility of the majority overpowering the state governments. Also, the Senate seats are for 6 years compared to the 2-year terms of representatives. This model is to foster debate and to hold in check mob rule by the majority. Add to this a president who would have national authority, but with little authority to pose his will on individual states. Finally, a court that was to be supreme in settling disputes between the states and the public at large. The model was for a representative democracy in a republican format of sovereign states with a judiciary to resolve serious conflicts. The rules of law was to be followed, and there would be no king. Yet we have those who wish to detract from or attack this model in today's society. Our model allows for their voices to be heard. However, when one views the world for what the citizens of the world desire, the model of those seeking to gain personal freedoms in this world is the model created by a bunch of rebel colonists taking on an oppressive king in 1776. Enjoy the holiday festivities this weekend, but then take a moment to give thanks to those who created our model of government and those who defended this great country ever since. Richard Corix is an Illinois native, attorney, and former DeWitt County state's attorney. And another column, The Prairie Doc, A Critical Time for Public Health Advocacy, by Jennifer Noel Foliard and Danielle Beatty Kenyon. There is a common saying in public health, everything is public health. That is because public health touches nearly every aspect of our daily lives. It is the clean water we drink, the air we breathe, the safety of the food we eat, and the environments where we live, work, learn, and play. These conditions do not happen by accident. They are shaped by policies, systems, and collective investments. Much like public education, public health reflects a shared commitment to creating the conditions where all people have the opportunity to thrive. Public health is your local school nurse caring for children, your extension agent helping families and farmers, your WIC dietitian supporting healthy pregnancies and babies, and your food inspector ensuring meals are safe to eat. Public health is as dynamic as the communities it serves. As communities change, public health must adapt to meet new challenges, respond to emerging threats, and address evolving needs. Yet we are facing a troubling reality. For the first time in generations, today's children are not on track to live as long as their parents. One reason for this is that public investment in health has not kept pace with the growing challenges facing our communities. We have seen significant disinvestment in public health infrastructure, prevention programs, and community-based services. These decisions have consequences. When we underinvest in public health, we increase the risk of chronic disease, infectious disease outbreaks, preventable deaths, higher health care costs, and reduced quality of life. In South Dakota, now nonprofit organizations, faith communities, health systems, and private businesses often step in to fill gaps and support community well-being. Their contributions are essential. However, preparing for large-scale challenges such as natural disasters, emerging infectious diseases, and public health emergencies requires coordinated local, state, and federal systems. The COVID-19 pandemic reminded us that diseases do not recognize city, county, state, or national borders. Maintaining strong public health infrastructure requires ongoing investment in communities that can respond quickly, effectively, when threats emerge. Public health works best when science and community experience inform one another. The most effective solutions are rarely simple, and they are seldom captured in a single headline or soundbite. They emerge when community members, policymakers, businesses, and local leaders work together to understand problems, to develop practical and evidence-based solutions. In the South Dakota Public Health Association serves as a trusted source of public health information, and our role goes beyond sharing data and research. We want to help elevate the stories, challenges, and successes happening in communities across South Dakota. Is your community struggling to access healthy food? Are you concerned about healthy air quality, housing, transportation, or other factors affecting health? Have local residents come together to solve a problem in innovative ways? Policymakers and community leaders want to hear those stories. Public health is strongest when it reflects the experiences of the people it serves. Now is the time to share your stories of challenges and successes in your communities. The South Dakota Public Health can help amplify community voices, share promising solutions, and connect local experiences to state and local decision makers. Together, we can build healthier, stronger, more resilient communities. We invite you to share your challenges and successes and ideas so that we can learn from one another. Jennifer Foliard is a founder and principal consultant at Health and Nutrition First and lead of the Rapid Response Team for South Dakota Public Health Association. She is a registered dietitian with expertise in public health systems and policies. Danielle Bate Kenyon holds several positions, including Legislative Chair of South Dakota Public Health Association, University of South Dakota, Associate Dean of Community Health and Engagement, and Master of Public Health Program Director, and Professor of Pediatrics at the Sanford School of Medicine. The Supreme Court sides with Illinois in voter access case. Springfield. The Supreme Court last week confirmed that laws like Illinois' are fully consistent with federal law and that Illinois voters can continue to cast their ballots through Election Day this fall and in the future. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, in a statement on the Supreme Court's decision in Watson v. RNC. Raoul said the state was focusing on voter access, not voter suppression. The right to vote is the very core of our nation's democracy, and today's decision is a win that protects access to the ballot box for millions of Americans, Raoul said. It confirms that all votes cast on time should be counted. While today is a win for democracy, make no mistake, the fight to protect our democracy is not over. I am firmly committed to fighting any effort to undermine our free and fair elections. All Illinois children to receive blood lead testing. Springfield. Last week, the Illinois Department of Public Health announced universal childhood blood lead testing will take effect July the 1st, 2026, the culmination of years-long effort to expand the number of children who receive such testing. Through the Childhood Lead Program, IDPH identifies children who have been exposed to lead and who may need health interventions to address its effects. There is no safe level of lead in the blood, said IDPH Director Dr. Samir Voha. Through our childhood lead program, IDPH has identified thousands of children who have been exposed to lead, allowing for early intervention to address negative health effects and implementation of efforts to limit further exposure. With this move to universal childhood blood lead testing, IDPH is taking another step towards protecting the health and safety of Illinois' youngest residents. Previously, Illinois lead testing requirements applied to children living in the high-risk zip codes. Under the new standard that takes effect on July 1st, all Illinois children are to be tested automatically at 12 and 24 months. All children 6 years of age and younger are required to be assessed for lead exposure through the use of a questionnaire administered by a health care provider. Under Illinois law, blood tests that come back with confirmed lead levels in excess of 3.5 micrograms per deciliter require a public health intervention. This includes a home inspection to determine the source of the lead contamination. If lead is found, the inspector works with the resident to remove the sources of lead. In addition, a public health nurse will visit and educate the family on ways to protect children from harmful effects of lead. Lead exposure can lead to damage to the brain and nervous system, slowed growth and developmental, behavioral, and learning difficulties, among other challenges. More information on lead exposure can be found at Lead Poisoning Prevention. Childhood lead testing is just one of the ways that IDPH protects and promotes health of our children. Other department initiative includes providing guidance on immunizations for children and adolescents, and supporting access to those immunizations through Vaccines for Children program. Newborn screening, which allows for early detection, diagnosis, and treatment of more than 50 different disorders. Funding to support community-based promotion of infant-safe sleep practices. Support for hotlines to provide clinicians with essential information to help them care for infants exposed to HIV or congenital syphilis. Providing monitor support and training for Illinois certified school health centers. Evaluation of school-based oral health programs on behalf of the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, HFS. Supporting the Illinois Children's Mental Health Partnership and fortifying community networks for children's behavioral health care. The Friendship Centers, Christmas in July, July 13th, Clinton. The DeWitt County Friendship Center will host its first Christmas in July from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Monday, July the 12th. Free lunch is included from 11 a.m. to noon, which will include hot dogs, chips, and drinks. There will be crafts, cookies, breads, pies, and other goodies for sale. All proceeds go to the Friendship Center. That date again is Monday, July the 13th. And a note from history. In 1991, U.S. President George H.W. Bush formally inaugurated the Mount Rushmore National Memorial in South Dakota. And a note from Kermit the Frog. Kermit says drink plenty of water and stay indoors from 11 a.m. to November the 1st. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'll be back with you next week.